It's estimated that at least 1.5 million people died in the killing fields of the Khmer Rouge. Luan Ong told her story of surviving the violence and then coming to America in her first two books. And now in her third memoir, she describes trying to overcome the fear and anger from her experiences as she tries to establish a normal life. Lulu in the Sky, a daughter of Cambodia finds love, healing, and double happiness, is published by Harper Perennial, and I'm very pleased that it brings Luan Ong to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Now, you told the story of your family's experience in your first book, First They Killed My Father. How old were you when the fighting started?
I was 5 years old when the Khmer Rouge stormed in the country on April 17, 1975. And from that day on, for the next 3 years, 8 months, and 21 days, Cambodia would become this prison where people were turned into mass laborers.
But you were 5 years old. How much could you even understand?
I didn't. And that's why I wanted to write the book in the first person present tense narrative, because we didn't know what's going on. The soldiers came in wearing big smiles and shooting guns and bullets into the air and telling us the war was over. And we actually went into the street and applauded. We thought that it was going to be time for peace.
Now, how old were you when you were recruited to be a child soldier?
After going through the genocide, which is one of the most brutal in the history of mankind, I lost both my parents, and eventually I was so vulnerable and scared.
And some siblings as well.
Two sisters and 20 other relatives. And I was 8 years old when the Khmer Rouge soldier took me in and to train to hurt and to hate.
So 8 years old, that's young even for most child soldiers.
It was. But I was vulnerable. I had no one there to speak up for me, to protect me. My parents were gone. I was separated from my siblings. And I was also, because of all of that, of the violence I've seen, the hunger I've been through, I was full of rage and anger and hate. And they saw that and they thought it was a good thing. And they took that and took advantage of my suffering and wanted to turn me into a killer.
Even though your anger should have been directed at them.
It should have been, and it was. It was directed at them. It was directed at the war. But I was 8 years old, and so in my confused heart, it was directed at everybody else. It was directed at the birds, at the sunset, at the other girls and guys around me.
So did you see combat?
I was very lucky in that I was the war ended on January 7th, 1979, before it came into my village. And so I never saw live combat, but definitely ran away as soldiers were invaded our village and were shooting at us.
And you did have to deal with the Vietnamese invaders.
The Vietnamese came in and you know, I learned that one of the things we learned is that you couldn't run in a straight line. You had to run in a zigzag line so that if soldiers were shooting at you, whether they were Khmer Rouge, Vietnamese, or U.S., and we were told everybody were our enemies, and in order to survive, we had to take people out first. And if you run in a zigzag line, it would be harder for them to hit you.
Mm-hmm. You almost raped.
I was 9 years old when that happened, and like many other children without parents living in the aftermath of war, we were trying to survive, and I was out in the woods collecting firewood with my sister and another friend when the soldiers took me into a bush and tried to rape me. And I was so scared. I'd never seen a man's body part before, and there he was, and from somewhere, this anger and rage came up, and I screamed and I kicked him, and it landed where it really hurt a man. You know, and so I was able to get up and run away and escape that.
And then you escaped in another way. You, your brother Meng, and his wife Ing left Cambodia when you were just 10 years old. Why did he choose to take you and not one of your other siblings?
And I came into the world populated by, in Cambodia, 7 million people, but in my specific family, there were 9 of us, 7 siblings and 2 parents. And after the war, there were only 5 survivors, 3 brothers, my sister and myself. And my brother chose me because I was the youngest, and we wanted to get to a place where there would be schools and education, and being the youngest, I would have the most number of years to go to school to learn to read and write and make something different of my life.
And that's why you gave your second book the title Lucky Child.
I was called Gon Sam Nang in Khmer, which literally translates into lucky child, and everybody called me the lucky child that I was going to have this opportunity. But we didn't know if we would land in America, if we would be captured by pirates in the sea, because we came via the people's boat from Cambodia to Vietnam, Vietnam to Thailand. Didn't know if we would be hurt or killed, but we were lucky in that we actually did find safety and landed in the refugee camp in Thailand, and eventually were sponsored by the Holy Family Church Group in Vermont to come to America as refugees.
I've spoken to a lot of people who've been through major traumatic life experiences of the sort. Well, maybe some of them not even as bad as yours. And they all say that they were very reluctant to talk about it. I would think that if I had been through a terrible experience, that's all I'd want to do is talk about it. What about you?
Now, there were a couple of years that I didn't want to talk about it. And I think initially it was because I came to the U.S. as a 10-year-old and I didn't speak English. And when that happened, the memories, my parents' death, my father was executed, and my mother and four-year-old sister were taken from me. Just because I left it, it didn't mean that it left me. And so because I couldn't speak about it, it came back when I heard a loud kick of a car's engine. It came back when a low plane whizzes by. It came back every single 4th of July when my friends would eat hot dogs and hamburgers and celebrate. And I would crouch in fear thinking the war came back again. And so for me, because of the fireworks, which sound exactly like bombs. And so you would have those moments where Cambodia and the U.S. would superimpose over on each other. And I would be in fear and traumatized. And I came to realize quickly that suppressing it, I was holding it in my stomach and in my shoulders and in headaches and dreams and gritting my teeth, and that not talking about it was very toxic to me because the war had never been silent to me.
Was therapy available?
Therapy was available in high school for me. I went through severe depression when my body started changing, and then all of a sudden the memories were harder to suppress.
And then you say you got depressed when Pol Pot died.
And again, it was and I just couldn't understand when Pol Pot died and just where we are going to find the answer for what happened to us. And trying to talk to people who've been through it, we were all feeling similar rage at how dare he died. How dare he die before he was captured and put on trial to answer for their war crimes and crimes against humanity and genocide.
But even the people who have been captured and tried, they don't seem to be all that contrite.
You know, they all have
explanations.
You know, they are still denying what they did and what they didn't do. There's so many finger pointings and trying to, and those who are put on trial right now, a majority of them are still saying, I didn't know it happened. It wasn't my policy. It came from another order. And I have no power, no control over it. Over a million skulls in a country the size of the state of Oklahoma that is today littered with over 20,000 mass graves. 1.7 to 2 million Cambodians have been killed, died to starvation, diseases, hard labor, and execution. How is it possible that no one knew what happened and that these people who were in government, whose policy it was that instigated this, knew about it?
My guest is Luong Ung, L-O-U-N-G. UNG, her latest book, Lulu in the Sky, published by Harper Perennial. And your brother did want to keep you involved. He would leave articles about Cambodia around for you to read. And then you met Mark. Now, Mark had spent time in the Philippines, but how much did he know about what had happened in Cambodia?
He knew a little bit from what he read.
How old were you and how old was he at the time?
We were both 20. Mm-hmm. You know, we met in college, and we were drawn to each other because he had spent time in the Philippines, so he found the histories of Asia very interesting. And I was just happy to meet somebody who's actually been to that part of the world, who actually knew a little bit about Asia. But he knew so little because there was so little information out there about what happened in Cambodia in this genocide. And what did exist were stories about the war and the soldiers and the Khmer Rouge. And there was an anger in me that said that can't be all, that we're not getting the stories of the survivors, of the mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters who made it out.
Well, how old were you when you started writing about this then?
I started keeping a journal when I was 16. And again, when I went through my first severe depression, I couldn't talk about it. I just didn't. I thought if I talked about it, I would cry, and then I would never stop.
Well, what about writing First They Killed My Father? How old were you?
I was 29 when I started turning my diary into a book, and because I wanted people to know what happened.
You write that when you were in college, you'd only had two models for men, fathers and soldiers. And I assume Mark and then some other people you met at least gave you another model.
Men, you know, I am so blessed to have remarkable men in my life as friends, as feminists, as fathers, as chefs, as musicians. And so there are many, many different models for men in my life now. And they all have the one thing in common, and I think to be friends with me, and that they are very gentle and with kind heart.
Now, we talked about that rape attempt before. At one point in the evening with Mark was destroyed by when you had a flashback. Were you having a lot about that? Were you having a lot of flashbacks?
You know, it was amazing with PTSD, post-traumatic stress, is that they would come at the most inopportune time. And I would have flashbacks, you know, during 4th of July. I would have flashbacks when I got very hungry. I would have flashbacks if I was looking at a sunset and something, a memory of the war would come. And I was, I had a flashback when I was Mark. And we were, like many other young people, intimate and kissing and hugging. And all of a sudden, I just had the flashback of the soldiers pushing me down. And it scared me and it scared him.
How did your brother and sister-in-law relate to this relationship? Because in Cambodia, you would have an arranged marriage, wouldn't you?
I am the first girl in my family to say no to arranged marriage. And from my great-grandmother to grandmother to sisters to my brothers everywhere, and they were all arranging a marriage. It took them some getting used to, and it took us having loud discussions, but I was not going to let that happen.
And you married Mark? Go ahead.
Eventually I did. Yeah, we dated for 12 years before we married because my fear was so strong of losing someone else I love. It's irrational to people who've never been through it, but because I've lost so many family members, I was so afraid that if I allowed myself to love and commit, that person would be taken from me, and I just don't know how I could survive that.
But then you returned to Cambodia 15 years after you left, and you found somebody. You found your sister, a sister you'd left behind, Chu.
You know, that was... life is full of miracles. I am so blessed. I am so grateful to be able to go back to Cambodia and to find my sister that I hadn't met in 15 years. And we were such good friends. Again, there were seven of us. And when we were separated, I was 8 and she was, I was 10 and she was 12. And it was to each other's shoulders that we would cry on when we lost our mother and fathers and sisters. And to be able to go back and reconnect with her and to hold her hands and to give her a hug, that was one of the biggest joy in my life.
That also led you to become an advocate to eradicate the landmines that have been planted by the Khmer Rouge.
When I left Cambodia, I landed in Essex Junction, Vermont. And for those of you who've been to Vermont, it's beautiful, it's green, it's vast land and hiking trails. And so I spent a lot of time outdoor and playing and walking in the grass. And to go back to Cambodia and then to be told that I had to walk on the beaten track and that if I took a step wrong, these weapon systems that litter in the millions in Cambodia, the size of a hockey puck, a compact powder, could take off my limb, my life, my leg. They're weapons of mass destruction.
And they're still doing that to people.
They are still doing that in an average of 80 to 100 people every single month.
In a note at the beginning of the book, you describe it as part memoir, part creative nonfiction. Where did you play fast and loose here?
Yeah. Well, the stories of my mother and my grandmothers, I got these stories by doing interviews with their loved ones, my uncles, my mother's best friend. My mother died when I was 8, and just last year, I outlived her. So it was really important for me to try to find out who she was as a woman, not just as my mother.
Because you never had a mother.
Because I never had a mother, but I've always wanted to know her. I've always wanted to be with her, and so I went back to Cambodia and interview all her friends.
Luong Ung will be speaking with Patricia McCormick at the Asia Society tonight at 6:30. That's at 70th and Park Avenue. Did you always imagine that you'd be writing a trilogy, or did you think there was going to be one book?
I never even imagined I would even write one book. My degree is in political science, and I am just as surprised as anybody else that I actually have three books out.
Well, thank you for coming by to talk about this one. Lulu in the Sky, it is published by Harper Perennial. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to come by and see you tonight.
Thank you for having me on your show.